sometimes you only have to do it here.
Okay. Hopefully they won't. Yeah.
Everybody ready? Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. I call this informal hearing to order. It is 1:34 p.m. on Friday, November 3rd. And I'm Commission Chairman Randy Christman. With me is Commissioner Brian Krashes and Commissioner Julie Fedorchek. So we have a quorum. Our informal case today is PU-17-332, Northern States Power Company's 115 kilovolt transmission line in Cass County. I mentioned the commissioners. With us today also are Jerry Lean and Victor Shook from staff. I'll let the NSP people introduce themselves, and then Victor, if you'd take a microphone over to the crowd. Oh, also Steve Call from staff is here as well.
Dave Cedarquist with Xcel Energy.
Matt Langan with Xcel Energy.
Jason Standing with Xcel Energy.
Pam Link, Labor's Local 563.
Steve Cortina, Labor's Local 563.
And we have some folks on the phone, too.
Gene Cox, Xcel Energy, calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Yeah, there's Chris.
Chris Buvalds with Xcel Energy. I'm in a room with Ben Galay and Tim Rogers. Chris Rogers. Xcel Energy.
And Freeland Demaray, HDR Engineering out of Billings, Montana.
Chad Nissen, Xcel Energy.
Okay, so I think that's everybody then. I would just want to emphasize this is an informal hearing, so this is about evidence that is not in dispute. If we get into any evidence that is in dispute, we'll have to shut this down and go ahead and set up a formal hearing for that. Commissioners, anyone have any opening comments?
I do not.
Okay. This is Commissioner Krashes's portfolio, I believe. But we will take the applicant first and then staff, and we have no interveners, but then there will be a time for public comment if there are any. And so I'll turn it over to you, Dave, and you can tell me who's supposed to speak.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. First of all, I'd just like to start by saying thanks for accommodating our schedule change here on the agenda, and thanks to our friends at MDU, too, for letting us go first as well. You have in front of you the hard copies. You'll also see a larger map by itself. That's the same map that's inside the printout there. It's just a little bit larger, so you can see that. We have made a number of significant investments in North Dakota, reliability-based now for a while, and particularly in Fargo. This is another one of those investments. It's about a $19 million investment, but I just would like to say we're not requesting any kind of a rate increase as a result of this investment, and as a transmission project, it is an NSP system project and is therefore the costs are borne by our entire five-state footprint. So I just wanted to make that clear right off the top, and we're going to let Jason and Matt here talk about the project specifically. So take it away, Jason.
Actually, let me just do a real quick introduction on the application. Thank you for having us today. We have a application in to the commission for a certificate of public convenience and necessity. We'll get into the project details here in our presentation, but very briefly, it's a 5-mile, 115 kilovolt line. A portion of that line connects into our existing Maple River substation, which is outside the city limits of the city of Fargo. It's in Reed Township. Therefore, we need certification from the commission through the public convenience and necessity for that project, so hence our application. What we're going to do is Jason's going to, who is an electrical engineer with us, is going to speak about the project need and some of our analysis that drove us to this project, and then I can talk about the project itself in terms of its route, the stakeholder participation and input that we've garnered, the approvals that we've received in order to be here with the presentation before you today.
You drive.
There you go.
Is it working? Kind of. Maybe not.
Can you advance, Steve?
I think we're frozen.
Well, we have copies.
I could talk about it here. If it moves forward, we can get to it.
30 seconds ago.
Part of our annual NERC analysis, which is our reliability analysis that we perform every year as part of our compliance, this project was identified with several overloads in the area, mostly due to load growth in Red River, Cass County, and Madero. And after you have a copy of the actual draft study report, and through that, we have proposed to build a second separate circuit from Red River Valley to Maple River, which will basically alleviate the worst contingency in the area, which should, you know, reliably serve the area for many years to come. You know, that's not advancing. So I have a list of the actual contingencies in the report or in the presentation. You can look at them if you want. You know, that's a loss of two separate elements at the 115, which is why it's been identified in as far as NERC goes. So that's kind of all I have at the moment. Oh, it is coming. Okay. Can we go to the next one? Yeah. So you can kind of see that I've worked out approximately how much megawatts are at risk by the load shed or potential load shed if either of these contingencies happen simultaneously. Well, they don't happen very often. They do happen, so which is why we have to plan for them. So separate double circuiting the Maple River to Red River will eliminate that contingency and eliminate all of those overloads. That's kind of all I have. Matt, you want to go?
Sure. And so If there are no questions about need, we can go directly to speaking about the route that we've been approved for through the City of Fargo. When XL Energy goes to route a transmission line between two endpoints here, their existing endpoints in the Maple River substation in Reed Township and the Red River substation down in the lower right-hand corner of your map in the City of Fargo, our main aim is to reduce impacts to the extent possible, and sometimes one way to do that is to find the most direct route, so you've got the least amount of line mileage between the two endpoints, and other times it's where you look for existing compatible land uses along that route, existing developed corridors, as a for instance. And I think with this project route, we actually have accomplished both. It's a pretty direct route between the two substations, 5 miles in length. And as you start at the Maple River substation, we parallel an existing 230 kilovolt line. And as we get to the Burlington Northern railroad tracks, then that is really the primary stretch of this route. We are just offset from the railroad right-of-way. We have approvals from Burlington Northern to be positioned at that location. Maybe a little hard to tell on this map, but we're just the alignment would be on the northeast be north of the railroad tracks at this location.
And in their right-of-way or adjacent to their right-of-way?
Outside of their right-of-way.
On
yep.
other?
Okay. On private, yes. On other owner's land, yes. A decent chunk of this land, actually, as you move to the east of I-29, is NDSU land and some of their agricultural lands. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they've been excellent to work with along the way as well. As we move closer to the Red River substation, there actually is kind of a pinch of railroad tracks there, so we move off of the railroad right-of-way and onto Great Northern Boulevard, Great Northern Drive, for that kind of last half-mile section of the transmission line right-of-way. And there I'd characterize that land use. Again, we're on the northern or the northeastern side of that road. There the land use is primarily light industrial. It's kind of a commercial light industrial area with sufficient right-of-way to route and operate and maintain the line. This is a portion of the approval we needed from the city of Fargo, which is called a right-of-way occupancy permit, because we will be sharing some of their road right-of-way with the transmission line right-of-way. Again, this overlapping of the two right-of-ways we feel is good land use compatibility work. We do need to reroute a portion of the city's storm sewer as a part of that, so we have that in our agreement with the city. So a few more details about the project. Again, the location, it's in Reed Township and City of Fargo. Length is approximately 5 miles. The structure heights are, between 70 and 80 feet above ground level. And the right-of-way that's required for this is somewhere between 50 and 75 feet. And then the typical span between each structure is about 350 feet.
Quick question,
yes.
Matt. Did the city of Fargo require you to do some underground, and if so, where is that?
They asked us to analyze underground as an option, and so we did a report on what the costs would be associated with that, construction time frames, and any kind of maintenance spans for if you went underground versus an overhead scenario. And at the end, it was our proposal to keep this all above ground, and the city understood that. They did not ask us to pursue an underground option in that location.
And did you study the entire thing underground?
We did
not. Or just pieces?
Just pieces, and it was primarily focused on that Great Northern Drive stretch.
Okay.
Is where they asked us to look at that.
How much additional was it? Curiosity.
My recollection is for that, just even for that discrete stretch, it was four times as expensive. And so from less than $1 million to over $4 million if we were to underground it.
And then maybe you didn't even get this far, but would it have been the expectation that the city would have paid the difference between what the costs were and what the additional costs were?
It is my recollection that yes, the city would have had to have paid for that. Let me verify with somebody that's on the phone, our project manager, Chris Buboltz. Is that your recollection as well, Chris, that the costs of undergrounding would have had to have been borne by the city?
Sorry, Matt, but that's actually incorrect. It would have been socialized costs across all customers.
I'm glad I asked.
Yes, me too.
And so the city could make that requirement and you'd have to do it and everybody would pay if they decide to do that in the future?
That is, in this scenario for the transmission line, I believe that was the finding through our regulatory group.
Okay. Do you have other jurisdictions that do require that? Other communities that you do recall in Minnesota, any place?
This is Dave. When we were looking in Fargo at this community requested facilities charge earlier, those are for expenditures that were not allowed to socialize, if you will. Mm-hmm. So my presumption here is that most of these transmission type costs don't fall into that bracket. We have in Minnesota several communities that have the community requested, but again, those are for like undergrounding of distribution lines and for the most part distribution related infrastructure.
Okay.
So I think there is a distinction there between a transmission and a distribution project.
I see. All right. Thank you.
Just a few more project details. The modifications that will be required at the two existing substations will occur within the existing fence line. We are looking at a construction start date of next November and have the project constructed and in service by May of 2019. Project cost, as was in the CPCN application, is $19.3 million. Thanks, Jason. And I just wanted to jot down some of the approvals that we've got along the way. This has been we've spent a good amount of time working with project stakeholders, local governments, and landowners, both corporate and private. And so we've been through the City of Fargo Public Works Project Evaluation Committee, which is represented by all the city department heads. So that's a good group to really get started with, and they'll forward, you know, recommend your project toward the Fargo City Commission, where we got route approval last December. We have been working with the Federal Aviation Administration, so the FAA, as well as the Airport Authority at Hector International, to make sure that none of the new structures going in would present a aviation hazard, and so we have those no hazard determinations from that group. We do have, and actually I do have to correct this, we have 25 of the 26 easements needed to build the project, and are hopeful to very soon have the 26th in hand. So we have the land rights necessary to build this. And then, of course, we were filed the CPCN application after having received all these local approvals towards the end of August this year. And with that, we're available for any questions that anyone may have.
I have a couple. One is the current infrastructure, can it handle an N minus 1 minus 1 scenario?
This study was based on the future loads at the time. I think it was started in 2010. So, and it's based on load level, not necessarily year-wise. So as long as you're underneath the certain load, yeah, it can handle an N minus 1 minus 1, you know, basically an N minus 2. So, you know, as the coincident peak has grown here, that's where we're starting to show the issues. So, you know, it can handle as it sits right now. So, yeah.
So at some point in the future, it would no longer.
As the load continues to grow, yes, it's going to cross the point where.
You know when that would be?
It's based on load growth percentages. So the study was done with a 2% growth assumption. So I think you pointed out in the study at what years exactly it was. I think it was 2023 or something like that. But if the load grows faster, it'll, of course, push the years forward. If it grows slower, it'll push the years out. So it's impossible to tell. But at the moment, you know, we're still okay. So.
Okay. Second point. Actually, this is a bit of absolutely meaningless trivia, but this line goes right past the Livestock Research Center where I worked. I went to NDSU, so it's actually going through a pasture that I rode a cutting horse on a number of times, so go figure. But have you lined up a contractor to do the work? Where are you at with that part of the process?
Chris, the question was whether we've lined up contractors to do the work yet. Are we that far along?
No, we're not, but preliminarily in all of the conversations that we've had with our construction department, this project is looking like it'll be internal Xcel Energy contract work, or not contract work, employed work, so our linemen, our civil crews, et cetera. But that is always subject to change depending upon how workload gets shuffled around throughout the portfolio.
Actually, I'd just like to clarify your first question, you guys. Looking at the study, it was needed in 2016, and we re-verified the loads that we are, in fact, hitting those today. So it's rare that an N-1-1 contingency ever really happens, so we're at that level today. It's my apology. I saw the 2023 date, which is his assumption for the next thing that would be needed based on a 2% growth. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm picking this up from someone else, so...
And I have to apologize. I should have deferred to you, Julie. My apologies. Oh, you're on a tighter time frame.
Thank you.
We can defer to you if you have questions.
I just had one other question, and that is at the Fargo approval level, I'm assuming that those are all open meetings, public meetings, where folks from the community could participate. Was there any public input at all?
There was not. Before we ever got to the city approval level, we sent out maps and letters to landowners not only directly affected but within about 1,000 feet of where the line was proposed. And so we were able to start our interactions with the landowners that way. So there was kind of that public outreach. Folks along or near the right-of-way were aware of the project, and then we went into the more formal city review and approval process, and those folks were similarly noticed when those meetings were going to occur, and that was an open public meeting, an opportunity to comment, but nobody availed themselves of that opportunity.
Very good. Thank you.
Yep.
I don't have any other questions.
Done, or do you have some
more? I think I am done at this point.
I have just a call. You answered almost all my questions.
Let's go, Holly.
You said, it says on your slide that all the easements are acquired, but you said it's really 25 of 26. Is this going to be an eminent domain case, do you expect, or is it just something that you're waiting on someone to sign that's out of the area, or what?
Sure. And maybe I'll... defer to Chris Rogers, who's on the line and is our land agent on the project, and he can explain the situation with the 26th landowner.
Sure. This is Chris Rogers, with Xcel Energy Siting and Land Rights, and there are a total of 26 landowners that own parcels along this route. Some of them own multi-parcels, so there's actually like 31 parcels, but that boils down to the 26 landowners. We did proceed with eminent domain filing on a couple of these. They have all been settled. The one remaining landowner, we do have a verbal agreement with, so we do expect to dismiss the condemnation case. We're just working out some of the details with him, but we do have an agreement with him in concept verbally to accept the easement. And hopefully that answers your question.
It does. Thank you. And my other question has been answered, but now I'm just confused. So clearly this is a new line where one doesn't exist. But in the original application, in the conclusion, it says the recommended plan for the Fargo load-serving problems is to convert the Maple River to Red River 115 kV line to double circuit and expand the Red River substation, which sounds to me like an improvement of an existing line. So we got to get to one or the other.
Right. Well, as I stated, if we double circuit with the existing line, make it a tower, basically for the 5 miles it runs, or I don't know how long the first line is, we actually have to count that as a single contingency under NERC criteria. So we're not gaining anything by double circuiting with the existing line. If we do two separate lines, that way we can eliminate they're two separate contingencies. So now that, so as far as the report, I'm not positive why it was said that way. And I don't think anyone here is really aware of why it was said that way, but the whether it was done under the old TPL analysis or under the new TPL criteria, the double circuit is still the same thing, so it should have been done as a separate circuit.
The double circuiting is not,
it's not going to work.
Conclusion or the proposal?
No, no, it is not. Right.
I know, I've seen those options, but this is listed as the conclusion.
Right. The options...
I'll just clarify that that's not...
It's not,
what it to do.
Yes.
And this is more for our own terminology. I'm in your application... On the fourth page, as far as needing a route permit, by law, it's the transmission lines that need the route permit, and those are things that are in excess of 115 kilovolts.
Correct.
This is 115 kilovolts, so it doesn't, but then we continue to talk about it even in the same paragraph as the 115 kV transmission line. Is there a different term we should be using for 115 and below, or is it a transmission line and we just have to realize sometimes we're talking about one definition of transmission and sometimes another?
That is an excellent question, and I can see where that would look confusing again even in the same paragraph. And we'll have to think about how to, you know, we always refer to these as transmission lines, and really the standard is the transmission facility per North Dakota code. But we'll have to think of a different terminology. Dave, do you have any bright ideas?
The only thing that I was thinking, Commissioner, is that the law appears to require the route permit for certain sized transmission lines, those exceeding 115 kV. So I wasn't assuming that this was defining what a transmission line is, just saying these are the types of transmission lines for which a routing permit. That was my interpretation. So.
Okay, I just didn't know if we should write our order and not use the word transmission if there's something else. Or
no, I think it is actually a transmission line. It's just... Yeah, we only have the siting jurisdiction over transmission lines over, you know, like we said, that certain kilovolts. So I think we're okay. I think we should probably call it a transmission line versus a facility, because the facility, I think, is what we refer to in siting. So,
because even the 57.5s are transmission lines, mm-hmm. right? They're not. When does something become a distribution line?
We have a couple different distribution voltages. Typically, you know, I've seen it always as 100 kV and above and 100 kV and below, but we have 69 kV transmission lines, and we also have some 34.5 kV transmission lines in outer Wisconsin and in South Dakota. Typically below 34.5, it's distribution to us.
What number?
34.5.
Okay, I don't have any other questions.
I had just one more. This is a real generic question. Would this be better defined as preserving reliability or enhancing reliability? Do you expect this to change the number of outages that you're currently experiencing in the area? Or is this more to prepare for the future and we're not going to see a measurable change?
Yeah, I would say it's more prepare for the future. The reason we study these, especially out-year models, is to prevent overloads and load shedding and things that nobody really wants. So right now you have a reliable system, but we see a problem coming, so let's fix it ahead of time before it becomes a problem. So the basic load serving of Fargo area will be maintained and intact.
I just have a couple of quick ones. So this is the building of this line is essentially to comply with NERC standards.
Correct.
For reliability. It's not NSP's view of here's how I make sure my system is reliable. This is what NERC says you have to do.
Yes, this is a NERC criteria.
Okay. And then my other question is kind of around the whole new line versus double circuiting. So I think what you were talking about potentially double circuiting is that what's on the map as the blue,
yes,
blue line, which they start and end at the same substation. I realize they take a little bit different windy routes. But,
yes.
I'm not an electrical engineer, so I'm a layperson in this, but it seems to me like even though they're slightly different routes, the likelihood of the yellow line being okay and the blue line not being okay isn't real high, but I, you know.
Yeah, I understand your question. I mean, typically transmission lines are 99% available, which means they don't go down frequently. But they do go down, and they can both go down. So, you know, we have NERC criteria looks at common corridor, even though they're not on the same tower. We look at those outages. Because over a mile, we also count that as one single contingency as well. So, I mean, I understand that you think, like, if the substation just disappeared one day, yeah, then the two lines probably won't matter. But under the way we study them now, you know, the chance of both of them going out at the same time are very unlikely unless a tornado goes through the area. So, but, you know, but even then, the area will be okay because it can handle now that double circuit outage versus, so without overloading the Cheyenne transformers. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. It doesn't seem to make sense, but that's, I mean, eventually you have to kind of stop it at some point with NERC, because then you can go, well, then do we have to route it all the way around the city to give it a completely different, right, you know, corridor? And so I think at some point they just decided to call it and say, well, as long as they're on two separate towers, not in the same corridor, yeah, that's
how. Yeah, you were getting to what I was going at. I mean, you know, at some point I realized NERC says this by the book, but, like, yeah, how about reality? You know?
Yeah, I understand. So engineering judgment is always a part of it, too, but we do have to maintain their compliance, and this is one of the ways that they've decided that it fits criteria. So
that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Can you give me just a little more information on when you said internal workforce? Are these individuals that live in the Fargo area? What do you mean by that exactly?
Say, Chris, were you able to hear the commissioner's question? Chris Buboltz, it was about where the construction crews might come from.
Their dispatch area, or their typical home show up would be our Maple Grove service center. But us being a union shop, our linemen and our employees are located all over the state of Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. I believe that the foreman that's been most involved with this project actually is from the Perham, Minnesota area, and would honestly love to have this project because it's probably as close to his home as he can possibly be.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? We have no interveners. Are there any public comments? Not seeing or hearing any. Anything else from the company? I guess I should have let you have one more chance to wrap up.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any objection to the evidence, both the oral as well as the slides that were handed out, becoming part of the official record? I see none.
No.
If not, the evidence, both oral and written, will become part of the official record upon which a decision is based. Are there any other matters anyone wants on the record on this case?
Nope.
Okay. Then this informal hearing is closed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.